And a little context for this series, we've kind of been in a pretty heavy series that we just came from where we went through the life of Peter. And so this series is designed to be a little more light, so to speak, maybe not having you wrestle with as many issues, but maybe just sparking some new ideas. And so I'm going to share a little bit about nature today, and next week Steve Harris is going to share about the Avett brothers, and we have Charlie sharing about novels, and Blaine Ring sharing about movies. And so part of what goes with this idea of everything is spiritual is the idea that everything in life can relate to God, can connect us to God, that we can take joy in the little things. And so hearing different people's perspectives will kind of give you a splash of their personality and what they see and ways that they maybe connect to God or find something to be spiritual. And so maybe it's not as much of a sermon as much as sharing, and so that's maybe a little bit of what to expect today. Maybe just take away a couple nuggets or truth, or help you think of things in a fresh perspective. The directive on the website says this: we believe that all of life, food, friends, work, money, pleasure, sleep, is spiritual. We do not fragment our lives. We live with a growing understanding that everything we do relates to God. So I thought I would open it up for discussion in typical Imago style. So tell me some thoughts. What do you think about this statement? Do you agree, disagree? Feel free to pitch in. Yes, Mandy.
It's easier to believe that than to live out.
Good one. It's easier to believe than live out. Yeah. What else? Other reactions? Food, yes. That was said in first service, actually. Yeah, so feel free to share if there's something that comes to your mind as something that's spiritual, one of those in particular. Any other thoughts, takers? Okay, well, I think part of the beauty of this truth is that it's so open-ended. That each of us, that's a little snapshot of my childhood, we'll get to that in a second. That each of us can take this statement differently. And so for me, nature is one of those things that is spiritual. So here's a snapshot of my childhood. You'll see on the right, that is a very small portion of my parents' front yard. I grew up in the country, 5 acres of yard, and then even more land beyond that. So I loved playing out in the woods, got poison ivy a lot, built forts, climbed trees, as you can see. That one, that's me. And then drove four-wheelers, and there's a picture you can see. My brother and I are on top of a load of corn. We used to like to wear like sweatpants and long sleeve shirts and just scoop corn and put it in our clothes and pretend like we were sumo wrestlers. So my brother was in first service. If you know my brother Ryan, you know that he won all those battles. He was the bigger sumo wrestler. And then there's a picture of my brother and sister and I at a gorge overlooking a cliff. And then the middle one at the bottom is actually a mountain in Guatemala. I went on a missions trip there. And so that was just a beautiful, beautiful landscape. It was a really pretty place. So as a kid, I was really curious, and I was the one who loved science class. And so maybe I'm a hippie, like Jeff was saying. But I think I'm still curious. I still appreciate nature, and I see God in my surroundings, in the beauty and the prettiness and just the vast diversity of creation. And so even now, I think one of my favorite things to do on one of the first warm days each year is just walk outside and just feel the warmth of the sun just penetrate my skin. I remember as a kid, I used to lay in the grass and just close my eyes and just feel the sun hit me. And I just fascinated and just love exploring and inspecting bugs. I used to lift up this one board that was like part of the landscaping. So it always annoyed my mom because she's like, quit, you know, lifting up that board and messing up the landscaping. But I would just lift it to see what beetles or critters would be under there. And so that's a little bit about me. So I was thinking about this sermon and just thinking about what do I love about nature. I thought of four things. The first one, I love its beauty. John Muir, who was instrumental in establishing some of our national parks, said this quote, "Everybody needs beauty as well as bread, places to play in and pray in, where nature may heal and give strength to body and soul." Someone asked me after first service if I was going to, if I believed that creation was created literally in 7 days, or if I believed in more of an evolution standpoint. And I told him I don't know the answer. So I'm not going to answer that question today in case anyone is curious, because I don't know if we have to answer that question. I think the bigger question that I already know the answer to is, where did it all come from? And I think that is God. I don't know how it all came to be, but I know that He is the one who authored it. It's hard to talk about beauty without seeing it, so I brought several pictures today. The first is sunset. This is a picture I actually took on my phone. A couple years ago, I had a stressful day at work, and I remember driving out of the driveway and or the parking lot. I took a left, and my first right, this big clearing opens up, and I saw this picture. And I just pulled over to the side of the road. I just had to take a picture of it. I'm like, that is so pretty. It was just so fascinating. And I wonder if I would have taken the other route home, if I would have seen this. If I hadn't taken that route, I wouldn't have been able to catch this glimpse of the beauty of creation. And to think that there are sunsets every day, and that in each part of the world it looks different. And probably only 5 times a year I really notice a sunset and take it in. I wish I did more, but I don't. But this day I did. Or here's another beautiful picture, a flower. I believe that's a lily, one of Christina's favorite flowers, and a little grasshopper on there. Or here's one, a beautiful rainbow. Whoa, I think that's a double rainbow. Or here's another one, a monarch butterfly. When I was a kid, I think when I was probably about 5, I rescued a monarch butterfly just like this from our kiddie pool. It was drowning, and so I nursed it back to health, and I let it dry out, and I watched it fly from my hand. And so that day was a special day for me and monarch butterflies. We bonded. So I named one Herman. That was my name for monarch. I don't know where I got the name. So to this day, I call all monarch butterflies Herman. So if I see one, I'd be like, "Hi, Herman." And I pretend. Now, when I was a kid, I actually believed that Herman came back to see me to thank me for saving his life. So now I just kind of kept that up, and I just pretend that each one is Herman. But I think I read that they only last about 6 to 8 months or something. So that's sad. But at least I gave Herman a couple more months to live. The fact is, the beauty of creation, we don't always cherish it. And I think we should. Because after all, this land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water, this land was made for you and me. So I love the beauty of this land, and it's easy to ignore it, even when we live in a city with the world's most beautiful drive. You know, we take it for granted, and maybe it is the world's most beautiful drive, maybe it isn't, but it sure is pretty. And I think if we stop, we will see God's beauty and see God in the beauty that He created. Because I think the thing that impacts me most about the beauty of nature is that it's unnecessary. I don't think it has to be as pretty as it is. I almost feel like every time I experience something really beautiful in nature, that it's like a little gift that God gives to me. Lafayette Bunnell, one of the first to discover Yosemite Valley, he wrote of his experience that day. He said this, "None but those who have visited this most wonderful valley can even imagine the feelings with which I looked upon the scene that was there presented. The grandeur of the scene was but softened by the haze that hung over the valley, light as gossamer, and by the clouds which partially dimmed the higher cliffs and mountains. This obscurity of vision but increased the awe with which I beheld it, and as I looked, a peculiar exalted sensation seemed to fill my whole being. And I found my eyes in tears with emotion, for I have seen before me the power and glory of a supreme being. The majesty of his handiwork is in that testimony of the rocks. The story goes that he wanted to stay a while and just take it all in. But the rest of the people wanted to move on. But he was trying to convince them to camp another night, and I don't think he was successful. And I think that's something we can learn, to just every once in a while pause and notice, because it's there. I think all of us would agree that nature is beautiful, but I think busyness and stress and routine kind of blinds us from seeing it in its fullness. Another thing I love about nature is its complexity. It's crazy. The more we learn about nature and about creation, the more we realize how complicated it is. Like each and every living cell we know is a miniature factory with all these intricate systems interworking together, that if one of those systems dies, that soon that cell will die. So it's all these things working together in this vast, complex system. Or this week, I was reading in this National Geographic, which we pass around the office because Charlie likes them and Ashby likes them. And it was talking, it's all about giant sequoias. And so here's this poster, which I love when magazines put posters in there. So here's this huge tree. It's the second tallest known tree in the world. It's they took this one because it has prettier foliage. What? How does foliage? Sorry, I'm not going to say that word. I don't know what's wrong with me today. Someone came up to me afterwards and said that I think they looked up. It's like 247 feet tall. Which is taller than any of the downtown buildings. Kevin, how tall is your office building? How many stories? 20. So this would be 20 over 24 stories. So if this tree was downtown, it would probably be the tallest thing down there. So I think that's fascinating. And so we're talking about complexity. On the back of the poster, it shows some of the wildlife that live just in this one tree that they've discovered. So all these insects and bats and flowers and squirrels and these plants and birds, that this tree in and of itself is a miniature ecosystem. And I found that really fascinating. Another thing that, just to demonstrate the complexity of nature, is we're constantly discovering that it's more and more complex. With each age, there's new discoveries that challenge our old paradigms. Like now there's quantum physics. And my brother was joking about, I think Brian Regan, he made some joke like, after 3 seconds of learning about, after quantum physics, his brain exploded. Like they crash these subatomic particles together and they're looking at all these things and they're separating electrons. They'll move them hundreds of miles and see, if I tweak this one this way, then what does it have an effect? And it actually has an effect hundreds of miles away, these tiny miniature electrons. Or then we have astrophysics, which that's on the other side of things. Quantum physics is really small things and astrophysics is space and the universe. And they've pretty much discovered what they would call dark matter and dark energy, and they would say that it's 90% of what makes up our universe, but you can't see it with the telescope, but they can tell it's there by the gravitational effect it has on other objects. And so for years, we didn't realize there was dark matter, and now there's this thing called dark matter, and people are trying to figure out what it is. And so it's kind of funny. I think it's funny that we don't know how it all works or even what it all is, but we keep discovering it's more and more complex. And I find that fascinating. And then Rob Bell, if you've ever listened to his DVD called If Everything is Spiritual, which is part of the reason why we get this title, he talks about how fragile our universe is and how Earth is the exact perfect place for life. That if one thing was tweaked one way or the other, if the amount of salt in the ocean was changed just a little bit, life wouldn't exist. Or if the Earth's axis was tweaked just a little bit, that it wouldn't be suitable for life. Or that if we were a little bit closer to the sun or a little farther farther from the sun. The fact that we are the distance that we are, and the turn and the speed, and the fact that it rotates each day, that this planet is perfectly suited for life. With all of its complexities and all the different systems that work in conjunction, I just find that amazing. And I think it speaks to me, to our Creator. Because I have a hard time thinking that it would all just happen by coincidence. Especially when you compound all of those complexities together. Another thing I love about nature is its diversity. There are 10,000 species, different species of ants. And I don't know why we need that many ants. Honestly, it seems like there's plenty as it is, even in just one species. But there's 10,000 different kinds of ants. And there's thousands and thousands of different kinds of flowers and trees and plants and all kinds of monkeys and tigers. And it's just amazing. Then we've got things that can fly, or things that jump or float or swim or slither, things that sting. And then we have things that glow. I think that bioluminescence, that's something that's really pretty fascinating. Like those, I think they're called anglerfish in Finding Nemo. Those things are real. With a little light, it like lures. It's like a mile below the sea surface, and it has this little light that it makes. I think it's amazing. So it's fascinating to me, the diversity, because you have all these different species, and then each species is unique, and it has all of its unique characteristics, and so many different things come in different shapes and sizes and colors. Here's this little critter, a mantis shrimp. Does anyone listen to Radiolab on NPR? Yes. Did you hear the colors one? So you heard about the mantis shrimp. So they were talking about colors and how, you know, we see colors and all the, you know, what certain colors are visible to the human eye and certain ones aren't. So this guy, you can see, has kind of big bug eyes, and I think he's about the size of a hand. And he has, mantis shrimp have twice the amount of color receptors than any other creature that we know of. So dogs have two kinds of color receptors in their eyes, so they can kind of see black and white. We have three, it's like cones, rods, and something else. So we can see colors, like obviously you know the colors you can see, unless you're colorblind. Mantis shrimp, they have 16 color receptors. And I just think, why does it need to have that many? Scientists have even commented, like, its brain is so small, it probably can't even take in the information of all the colors it's seeing. Or, like, why does it? But I think it's also fascinating that it looks like a rainbow. Because we see this, but if another mantis shrimp is looking at another mantis shrimp, it's going to be 10 times more colorful than that. So I think that's really interesting. Or here's this little guy, a tardigrade. Not pleasant to look at, but very fascinating. Here's what Wikipedia says about them. Tardigrades can withstand temperatures from just above absolute zero to well above the boiling point of water. Pressures about six times stronger than pressures found in the deepest ocean trenches. It can survive ionizing radiation at doses hundreds of times higher than would kill a person. And it survived the vacuum of outer space. They actually took it into outer space to see what would happen. They can go without food or water for nearly 120 years, drying out to the point where they are 3% or less water, only to rehydrate, forage, and then reproduce. Now that is a diverse creature. I know you probably don't want to look at that anymore, so why don't you look at your hand? Everybody, look at your hand. You've got tardigrades on your hand. I'm just joking. I just wanted to freak everyone out. So they're about the size of a poppy seed. So if you look at your fingerprint, about two lines of your fingerprint, that's about how big they are. So this is obviously a zoomed-in picture. And just a fun fact, they're also called water bears because you find them in moist places like on moss, and so that's where they're usually found. Then there's Mimi the bear, and she likes to do tricks for all of her zoo friends. And so I liked that picture, Mimi. So I think Mimi's a good example of the fact that even each individual creature that God made has a unique personality. like even us, we all have unique personalities and faces and fingerprints and DNA that's unique to only us. And I think it just speaks to God's creativity, that each thing is one of a kind. I think that's fascinating. Another thing that I love about nature is its enormity. Here's a picture of the Grand Canyon. And as a kid, we took a vacation. I think I asked my mom, she was in first service, how old was I when we took our vacation to the Grand Canyon? She said probably eighth grade. And I remember, so the picture at the beginning with my brother and sister, and we were kind of sitting on a cliff, that was actually a picture of a gorge. And I asked my mom, I'm like, wait, wasn't that the Grand Canyon? She said, no, that was actually, we stopped at a cliff on the way to the Grand Canyon as a change of pace, because I think we were getting tired of being in the car. And I wanted to stay there. And I remember thinking, this is amazing. We should stay here. We should take pictures. We should play. And my parents are like, no, we need to keep going, because you don't even understand. The Grand Canyon is so much better than this little gorge. And so I chose this picture because this is exactly what I remember it being. I just remember looking out, and as far as I could see, for miles and miles, just valleys and caverns and limestone, and it's just amazing. It's breathtaking. If you haven't ever been, you should really go. Obviously, it's why it's one of the wonders of the world. So it fits into the wonder of nature talk. Here's another picture. This is Christine and I at the beach in Charleston, South Carolina. We went there a couple years ago for a wedding. And I don't remember really thinking about this while we were at the beach. I was just enjoying the sand, and we always build sandcastles because we like to play on the beach. And collecting seashells, which you can kind of see on our towel. But I think the thing that I find amazing about the ocean that we really take for granted is how enormous it is. The fact that it took humans thousands of years to even cross it, to know what it was like on the other side. I think it just speaks to how enormous it is. But it's by far small in comparison to our solar system. So if we take a step back and look at space, the sun is 93 million miles away from the Earth. But yet it only takes 8 minutes for the light of its rays to reach our atmosphere. And I think that's amazing. It's 93 million miles away. And yet, that's not really an accurate presentation. This is probably an accurate picture of the size of the sun compared to the Earth. You can kind of see that the Earth is the third P from the sun. That millions and millions of Earths could fit inside the sun. And that's just our solar system, even though it's vast. I mean, if there's 93 million miles between the sun and our planet, then how much more if you go out to the end of our solar system? Or how much more when you consider that our solar system is just one of billions of others in our galaxy called the Milky Way? So this is where we believe the sun is in correspondence to the rest of the solar systems in the Milky Way. That you can't even see it. And of course, they don't actually have a picture of this, but they can put together all of their pictures and kind of create the semblance. But, I mean, that is just massive. I don't think we can fully comprehend the fact that if you took the time to count each star, it would take 2,500 years to count them all, just in our galaxy. And then there's hundreds of billions of other galaxies just like this in the known universe. And all of those things are constantly expanding and getting farther away from each other. So our universe is constantly expanding with all these hundreds of billions of other galaxies. So I say all that to just demonstrate how insignificant we really are in the grand scheme of things. How small we really are. We think the world kind of revolves around us. We close our eyes at night and everyone else goes to sleep. You know, it's just the world turns on and off whenever we are. But there's this story that Neil Armstrong talked about when he was in a space shuttle. Picture Neil Armstrong just a hair away from our Earth. And he said he was looking out the window of the space shuttle, and he held out his thumb and he closed one eye, and his thumb covered the planet Earth. That it blotted out the Earth. And he said, you know, you would think maybe he felt like a giant, but he really felt incredibly, incredibly small. So I know I lost a lot of you when I started talking about space. So I came prepared with some pictures of kittens. Here's a kitten with a duck. Very cute. Here's a kitten with a puppy. Another thing of nature to appreciate. Here's a kitten with a bunny. And here's a kitten pretending to be a bear. I thought you'd like that. So, these four things I love about nature. I love its beauty. I love being stopped in my tracks when I see something beautiful and I actually notice it. I love its complexity. I like letting my mind be blown by all of the systems that are working and pointing to the fact that I don't know it all and we don't know how it all works. I love its diversity and seeing God's creativity. And it's like we're constantly discovering new species and new parts of the planet that are yet to be discovered. And then we have the enormity of it's not just our planet, but there's so many other solar systems out there and galaxies that we have yet to discover. We don't understand. And then there's the dark matter issue and all these other things. It's mind-blowing. And I think it speaks, all of it, to an author behind it all. What I love about nature is I love its designer. And all of those four things point me to God. And maybe they don't point you as much as they do me, but I think it's so easy to, if we really pay attention to nature, to see God's creativity, God's beauty, that God is the author of its complexity. And again, I don't know how it all came about, and I don't know how he mysteriously works in creation, but I know he's behind it all. In Psalm 95, which is on page 482 in your pew Bible, we'll read a little bit about God as our maker. So 482, Psalm 95, we'll read verses 3 to 7. It says, "For the Lord is the great God, the great King above all gods. In his hand are the depths of the earth, and the mountain peaks belong to him. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands formed the dry land. Come, let us bow down and worship. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker, for he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care." The fact that God could make our planet and our solar system and our universe and yet still care about us blows my mind. When you really think about how small each one of us is and how many other humans there are and how small we are in this huge planet, and the fact that I felt God's love toward me and the fact that God wants to work in redemption, a redemptive story into human history, it doesn't make sense. I think it speaks to his beauty and his care and his love. And I think if we really appreciate the gift of nature around us, we'll see how incredible he is through these things. Matthew 6 says this, says, "Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they?" I think it's interesting, we reread in Genesis that God created everything, and then he said, "It is good." And when he got to humans, it's very good. I think creation invites me to worship a God like that. I think when I look at creation and I see the beauty that God has made in it, the creativity that he's placed in it, the diversity, and how vast it is, all the intricacies, it invites me to worship him. When I go and walk in the woods, I love every once in a while when life seems stressful and chaotic to just go on a little walk. And it doesn't take me very long to feel a little more peace and to realize that God is bigger than the little thing that I'm dealing with, and God can handle, and I can turn to him, and the fact that he lets me talk with him, and the fact that he gives us the beauty around us, I think it's really great. It's a gift that we probably take for granted more often than we should. And so, I just thought I would share a little bit about my perspective, little things that as I thought about something that's spiritual to me, I think time and time again, nature is one of those things. And maybe it's not as much for you, but maybe I sparked a little bit of an idea you didn't know, or maybe you hadn't seen a picture of tardigrades that realized they can survive outer space. But I think it's just amazing. And I think it just points us to our amazing creator. Let's pray.